Good morning, friends. It has been a great start to the summer. I want to echo what Jim said. We've had a great week here. Thanks for being here. I want to welcome our members. I want to welcome our guests, those of you who are here with us in the room, those of you who may be watching online. If you are a guest and I haven't had a chance to meet you, I sure hope that you will give me that honor. I would love to meet you. My family and I usually stand out at the back after service is over, so please come by and say hello. We would be honored to know who you are and to welcome you here to Preston Road. Jim thanked some people by name, and I'm so glad he did so at the beginning. I'm grateful to our team here, our staff and volunteers, and all who invested so much in making our block party a success, in making Camp Champion a success. So to Julie and to Stacy, others on staff, other volunteers, people in front and people behind the scenes. It took a lot of work to make those things happen. And I am very, very grateful to all of you who did that. It was a wonderful time. Let me tell you something. On Sunday night at the block party, I had a grilled cheese sandwich stuffed with brisket, okay? Have I told you I love being back in Texas? This is great. This is wonderful. We did get to meet a lot of our neighbors. I did. You may have known some of them, but I got to meet others who live around our building, and it was just great to interact with the neighborhood and to bless them in that way. So that was a great event. People had talked about it, and it lived up to all the hype. And thank you for being such a welcoming place, not only on Sunday night at the block party, but every Sunday morning as people come through our doors seeking different things in different ways. You really are a welcoming group of people, so thank you for doing that. You are making a difference when you say hello to people, when you see someone who looks lost walking around our building, when you see someone that you haven't seen before and you go up and say hello. That means more than you might realize. It's important, and you're doing it really well. Thank you for that. We're going to finish today our series going through the book of 1 John. And I want to tell you that as I have been doing my preparation for each sermon, I knew the book, I've taught on it before, but I was just overwhelmed with how much content there is in this short book about loving God and loving other people. It's just in every chapter. And so each time I would prep for a different section of text, I would think, what's the message I might get out of this? And it just kept coming back to those themes. And so if you have sensed some themes and even some repetition in the sermons, it's because John takes those up. But I have realized that John seems to be working out the greatest commands. And you may know this. When Jesus was asked what is the greatest command, he answered with two, and he's quoting from the Old Testament. One is to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and the other is to love your neighbor as yourself. So John, at the end of the New Testament, is quoting things that we read toward the beginning of the Old Testament. And he's tying all of this together. These two commands are all throughout the book of 1 John. And so as we read through these texts, we saw some of the messages that came out. One time, John says, here's how to live forever. And he says, die to yourself. And so we said, if we want to live forever, die to yourself. That's one of the messages from the book of 1 John, this sacrificial sort of love. And recently we took a tour through, you know, John and some quotes from, shall we say, classic rock and songs that some of us know, and I found out some of us don't. And we realized that love is sacrifice, not sentiment. It's sacrifice, not a sentiment. It's more about what we do and less about how we feel about what we do. And in many of the texts that we have read, we have seen how if we kind of imagine a diagram, the relationship between ourselves and God and the relationship between ourselves and others, those are interconnected. And so if we think that one of them can disconnect and the other be intact, we're wrong. And so we saw that you cannot love God while being in the wrong with a brother or sister. So if one of those goes away, the other goes away. They are interconnected. today, in our final message from 1 John, we're going to see the opposite. John says, you can't be in the right with a brother or sister if you're in the wrong with God. So what I want to do is take a look at what both of these imbalances could really look like. We're going to look at some scriptures. We're going to think about how this works out. We'll start looking at what it looks like to obey God, not to love others. We've talked about that. We're going to spend a little time on that. Then we're going to talk about what it looks like to love others, but not be in obedience to God, and what that imbalance looked like. And we'll try to find a way that does justice to both of those important principles, our obedience and love to God, and our love for other people. In the passage that you just heard, John says this: this is how we know that we love the children of God, by loving God and carrying out His commands. In fact, this is love for God, to keep His commands. And His commands are not burdensome, for everyone born of God overcomes the world. That's what John says. His commands aren't burdensome. This is how we know we love God. We keep His commands. So let's talk first about obedience to God without love for others. We've hit on this a few previous sermons. Let's bring it home today. Obedience to God without love for others can lead to dangerous consequences. If this becomes just legalistic adherence to rules and regulations without thinking about the welfare of others, it's going to lose its heart. It will lead us to pride and self-righteousness, judgmentalism, and this kind of obedience without love will come across as cold and rigid and heartless. Jesus talks about this kind of obedience without love. In Matthew chapter 12, Matthew tells us the story of two things that happened with Jesus in his encounter with people who were very fixated on obedience without worrying too much about love. Hear this from Matthew chapter 12. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry and began to pick some heads of grains and eat them. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath." Jesus answered, "Haven't you read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and he and his companions ate the consecrated bread, which was not lawful for them to do, but only for the priests. Or haven't you read in the law that the priests on Sabbath duty in the temple desecrate the Sabbath and yet are innocent? I tell you that something greater than the temple is here. If you had known what these words mean, 'I desire mercy, not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the innocent, for the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." Here's a second story. Going on from that place, he went into their synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Looking for a reason to bring charges against Jesus, they asked him, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" He said to them, "If any of you has a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a person than a sheep? Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." And then he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." So he stretched it out, and it was completely restored, just as sound as the other. But the Pharisees went out and plotted how they might kill Jesus. So here's a story about a group of people who had a laser eye for obedience, but they didn't care if that might lead people to starve. "Oh, you're hungry? I'm sorry. It's the Sabbath. There's nothing we can do about it. I guess it's God's will for you to starve. Oh, you're someone who needs healing? I don't know. It's the Sabbath. What can we do?" This is a group of people who were heartless in these endeavors. They really believed they were obeying God, but the way it led them to treat others meant that they valued a sheep more than a person. That kind of obedience is rigid and heartless, and it's not what Scripture calls for. It's an obedience that has no mercy and no compassion. This is not of God. And Jesus says as much in Matthew chapter 23. He sums up what has just happened this way. He says, "These teachers of the law and Pharisees don't practice what they preach. They tie up heavy, cumbersome loads and put them on other people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger to move them." So here's a group of people who put these weighty commands on others and talk about obedience, but have no heart, no love, no sacrifice to help those who are burdened by these commands. So this kind of obedience without love is legalism. Obedience without love is legalism. It's just a checklist faith that doesn't care a bit about others. This is the, "I just tell it like it is and I don't sugarcoat it," kind of conversations. There's no room for mercy, no room for grace. It takes a dim view of other people while we elevate our own standing. So if our obedience to God leaves a wake of burdens and hurt and division, we're doing it wrong. That's not the fruit of true obedience. So that's the danger of obedience without love. It can lead to legalism. Now let's take up what John has said in the chapter we're reading today, chapter 5, 1 John, love without obedience. What does that look like? When we focus on love without focusing on obedience, this leads us to become subjective and relativistic. It's going to be driven just by our personal preferences or societal norms. It might lead us to condone behaviors that contradict God's standards. It might lead us to accept sinful practices. This kind of love is just going to be swayed by our emotions, our fallible reasoning, and it will lead us to misguided actions. It might enable harmful behaviors. That's what love without obedience looks like. You want an example of that? Let's see what Paul says. So the Apostle Paul is writing to the church in Corinth, and he's not very happy with them for a number of reasons. But one of them is for what they are putting up with. So in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, Paul writes this. "It's actually reported that there is sexual immorality among you, and of a kind that even pagans do not tolerate. And you're proud. Shouldn't you have rather gone into mourning and have put out of your fellowship the man who has been doing this?" Skip down to verse 6. "Your boasting is not good. Don't you know that a little yeast leavens the whole batch of dough? Get rid of the old yeast so that you may be a new unleavened batch, as you really are. For Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed. Therefore, let us keep the festival, not with the old bread leavened with malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." So here's a church that is not just putting up with, but is in fact proud of their putting up with, immoral behavior. And they might say to themselves, "We're being loving." And Paul says, "You're not, because your love is way out of alignment with obedience to God." And so don't be proud of that. Don't think you have a higher standing because of that. Your love has neglected obedience to God. Or John himself tells a story in his very short second letter. 2 John, beginning in verse 7. He says, "Many deceivers who do not acknowledge Jesus Christ as coming in the flesh have gone out into the world. Any such person is the deceiver and the antichrist. Watch out that you do not lose what we have worked for, but that you may be rewarded fully. Anyone who runs ahead and does not continue in the teaching of Christ does not have God. Whoever continues in the teaching has both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not take them into your house. Do not welcome them. Anyone who welcomes them shares in their wicked work. So here's people who might say, I'm doing the loving thing. Here's a person who needs shelter. They're coming here to do some teaching. The right thing to do would be to love them and welcome them, house them, and feed them. And Jesus says, that's not at all what to do. John says, that's not exactly what to do. He says, don't put up with teaching that is literally anti-Christ. That's not loving. That neglects obedience. So in this case, showing love would be the opposite of obedience. So if obedience without love is legalism, the flip side, love without obedience is just mere sentimentality. It's what we talked about in previous sermons. It's just feelings. And emotions are important. I don't want to downplay those. But relying solely on those is not going to work. And so this kind of love without any thought of obedience is just pure sentimentality. So if those are the two dangers, what does true obedience look like? Obedient love. What would it look like to put those together? Because I think those things fused together are a very powerful expression of faith. Obedience and love together will motivate us to embrace things like justice and mercy, compassion, reconciliation, sacrifice. That's what happens when these two things go together. And they balance each other out so that faith doesn't become just this intellectual exercise of commandment keeping, nor this sentimental exercise of just good feelings towards anyone else unmoored from Scripture. When I think of obedient love, the story I think about is Ruth. This is who I think shows us obedient love. So the story of Ruth is a mother-in-law and two of her daughters-in-law find themselves widowed within a short period of time. And the mother-in-law says, you know, I've got a different phase of life right now, but you two should go on and go live your lives because the thing that connected us is no longer there. And yet that's not how the story goes. In Ruth chapter 1, verse 15, Naomi, the mother-in-law, says, look, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. But Ruth said, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, your God, my God. And where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. Here's a person who doesn't even have faith at this point in the God of Israel. And yet she understands the importance of obedience because she says, your God will be my God, so I'm going to start obeying. And she manifests this sacrificial love. I'm going to give up the dreams I might have for my life. I'm going to give up my preferences. And I'm going to go follow you because we are fused together now. That, my friends, is obedient love. Sacrificing myself to carry out one of God's commands, to be faithful to someone in need. That's obedient love. John tells us in his second letter that this is love. We walk in obedience to his commands. As you've heard from the beginning, his command is that you walk in love. Brothers and sisters, obedience, when it's lived out in loving others, is not a burden, as we heard earlier. It's not a burden. John tells us that we've been born of God, that we're overcomers. So the kind of sacrificial love married with obedience to God is not a burden. It's exactly what we're called to do. Listen, some of us today, we know exactly what command to love we need to carry out. Some of us need to carry out the command. We need to be obedient to the command to love our neighbor. And you've got someone you know who's a neighbor in any sense that you need to love. And you know the story of the Good Samaritan. A neighbor is anyone we know who's in need. Some of us today need to love our neighbor. Some of us need to be obedient in loving our enemies. Somebody out there right now has done you wrong. Somebody's frustrating you. Somebody has views about current events you find repulsive. Scripture calls you to love your enemies. So some of us today need to live out that command. Scripture calls husbands to love their wives as themselves. So for some of us who are married, we need to carry out the command to love our spouse. That's what it looks like to be obedient. We do all these things because the psalmist once said to God, I love your commands. I love your commands. This isn't burdensome. We love God's commands. So, brothers and sisters, may we be like this psalmist who says, I love your commands. That's our act of obedience. And may our love for these commands cause us to obey the commands to love others. For this is of God. Let's be standing as we sing.